Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I have another listing here of a group that's coming up.
As the Newport Jazz Festival gets underway today, we wanted to listen back to a key moment from 1955.
And then we go on down to Miles Davis, trumpet. Miles Davis.
That's jazz legend Duke Ellington, introducing Davis before his first appearance at the festival. What a combo. This recording is part of a new collection of Davis's performances at Newport, just released this month. And my co-host Anthony Brooks recently spoke with festival organizer George Ween about the collection and Miles Davis's evolution as a musician.
60 years ago, Miles Davis took the stage at Newport for the first time and performed Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight. It was 1955, early days for the Jazz Festival. George Ween, who was then and remains today at the age of 89, the driving force behind the festival, recalls that memorable performance.
The sound system was terrible that year. Remember, this is the second year of the festival, and we hadn't really developed our technical abilities yet. And Miles put the bell of his horn right in the microphone and overcame the bad sound that some of the bands had to put up with.
This solo stole the show, and it earned Miles Davis a deal with Columbia Records. But as George Ween recalls, this performance would never have taken place if not for a chance encounter with Miles Davis earlier that year.
I was in a club in New York, walking out of the club, and Miles is there. And he says, "George, you're going to have a jazz festival this year?" I says, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, you can't have a festival without me," Miles says. And Miles used to like to repeat statements all the time, "You can't have a festival without me." So I called his agent. I brought him up to Newport. He wasn't even advertised. He didn't have a band. Thelonious Monk didn't have a band. Jerry Mulligan didn't have a band. And Connie Kay and Percy Heath were with the Modern Jazz Quartet. So I put this group together, and they just jammed. And they played Round Midnight, and it destroyed the audience.
This version of Round Midnight is part of a new collection of Miles Davis's performances at the festival called Miles Davis at Newport, 1955 to 1975, the Bootleg Series Volume 4. It includes 4 hours of previously unreleased recordings.
Miles, in his book, writes that he used a mute in that solo. And as you can hear now, it was with an open horn. And for some reason or other, Miles remembered that he had a mute. The sound is beautiful now.
George Ween, I'd love it if you could tell the story. So Miles Davis comes off the stage after that performance. A lot of people are paying attention to him now. And he has something to say about the way Thelonious Monk played that, right?
Well, Miles comes up to me and says, "Del Thelonious, he plays the wrong changes in Round Midnight." I says, "Miles, he wrote the song. What are you going to do?" I mean, that's exactly the way the world was in that time in jazz. People developed their own sense of improvisation and what they felt comfortable with.
Now, did you know, George Ween, at that moment that you were seeing a historic performance that's been remembered for so long?
I think I did, because what it meant was, for the first time, one of the great trumpet players that emerged out of the bebop era wasn't playing bebop. All the trumpet players were more or less in the Dizzy Gillespie mold. And Miles was the first one to break that mold. And we played the melody on Round Midnight. He just gave it the most beautiful interpretation, very traditional interpretation, even though it was very modern in its actual performance.
Well, I want to ask you about some of the great moments in this collection. Miles Davis came back to Newport in 1958. By then, he's a much bigger star. He's a best-selling artist. He was performing with a sextet that included John Coltrane. So let's listen to his number, Alu Cha. What struck you then about how he had changed, how he was developing as an artist?
Miles was like a chameleon. He absorbed what was happening around him. And he knew that everybody was talking about Cannonball, and there was beginning to be talk about Coltrane. And, of course, Coltrane eventually took over the whole music scene. But at that time, it was all experimenting. And Miles was listening to Coltrane. Miles said to Coltrane, Why do you play so long? Why do you play so many choruses? He says, I don't know. I just seem to keep playing. And Miles says, why don't you try taking the horn out of your mouth? So all of these things. And, of course, Cannonball was a swinger in the Byrd tradition. And it was a great band. It was a fantastic band, you know.
Well, there's great live energy in these recordings, isn't there? I mean, listening back, how do these live recordings give a different appreciation of these guys?
Musicians respond to an audience, and if they went into a hall that night and the people were waiting for them, and the minute they started to play, they could feel the energy in the audience, they responded with the music, and that's exactly what happened with most of these tapes.
So, George Wein, 1969 was a big year for the festival. Tell me about that.
I had all the rock groups on that festival because jazz was at a very low ebb, and I figured that I had to do something to keep the festival au courant, so to speak. Hmm. And Miles stayed around the whole festival when he normally would just come, play, and leave as fast as he could. He stayed around right at my shoulder for two nights, and he saw the response of the audience. And that's when he decided, when he started to play again, to go into a more electronic scene, which he did in the last few years of his life. That's all he played.
Well, speaking of that, so here's a recording of Davis playing Bitches Brew in 1971 at the Newport Jazz Festival in Europe. So let's listen to a bit of this. Bitches Brew was a big moment for jazz. He, as you mentioned, it was already happening before, but Miles is beginning to fuse jazz with non-jazz elements, and a lot of folks sort of accused him of selling out. What was your take?
I love the early Miles because the purity of his trumpet was so beautiful. I mean, there was nothing more beautiful in jazz at that time. But the people liked what he was doing, and he enjoyed doing what he was doing. It made it easier on him because he could lean on the rhythm and lean on the sounds of the orchestra, where before he had to carry everything else by himself, just with his horn. And you can hear the difference. So to say sold out is a strange thing. He always wanted to change with the times. And he was just paying attention to that.
What's it like for you to hear these recordings again, all these years later?
Well, my life is two things. A life of memories, which I try not to get too involved with, but everybody's asking me about my memories. But really, I'm concerned with the future. I'm 90 years old. I'll be 90 in October. But I spend my time wondering about what's going to happen with jazz. There's thousands and thousands of young people playing jazz that come out of schools having studied jazz. So far, we're still leaning on the history of the music. At the same time, You have some people that have evolved into commercial acceptance, like John Batiste. John Batiste, a fantastic musician, and his music communicates.
I went down to St. James Infirmary, and I saw my baby lying there.
Whether he's the one that's the future of jazz, that's another story, but he will be around and a popular figure in jazz for years to come. But I hope I live long enough to see some of the things I dream of.
What has kept you so attached to this music for so long?
I guess I got bit by it when I was about 14 years old, and this bite has lasted. I could have been a major rock promoter and made a lot more money than I've made, but I found out that I'm happy when I was creating my festivals and musicians cooperated with me and we created history, like Miles, like Duke Winton playing with Tony Bennett just a few years ago and also working with Dave Brubeck on one of his last concerts. There's hundreds of these memorable moments over the years at different festivals. And I enjoy that. I didn't want to just service the groups. I wanted to be involved in producing an event and not just put on a star because they sold a lot of tickets. I could have done that. I've done that when I had to do it. But my love is creating as much as it's possible within the structure of what a festival gives us.
Well, George Wein, it's such a pleasure to talk to you and to hear you express the passion that has been there for so many years. That's George Wein. He's co-founder of the Newport Jazz Festival, which gets underway at Fort Adams State Park in Newport, Rhode Island this weekend. He was also talking about the new box set called Miles Davis at Newport, 1955 to 1975, the Bootleg Series, Volume 4. There's a lot more information at RadioBoston.org. And George Wein, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and if you come out to Newport, I'll be driving around in my Wein machine so you can say hello to me. I'd love it.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a terrific weekend, and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.
Davis. Thank you. Miles Davis, Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock, Ron Carter, and Anthony Williams. Thank you for the Miles Davis Quintet.